This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez takes fire from the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Senator Harry Reid says the war in Iraq is already lost. Joining us today to talk about these stories and more, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, Joe Davidson, an editor at the Washington Post, and Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University and columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. Welcome, everybody, and let's go to the AG. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Now, yesterday he went before the Senate Judiciary Committee to defend the firing of eight U.S. attorneys. With that said, he also acknowledged that the dismissals were handled badly.
Those eight attorneys deserve better. They deserve better from me and from the Department of Justice. I regret how they were treated, and I apologize to them and to their families for allowing this matter to become an unfortunate and undignified public spectacle. I accept full responsibility for this.
Although Gonzalez accepts full responsibility, he was grilled very often by the Republican senators that one might expect to be on his side. Mary, what do you make of the way that Republicans came at the attorney general?
Well, they saw that he was a total embarrassment. And I'm embarrassed for Gonzalez, and I have no reason to be embarrassed for him. But it was just a pitiful performance. Here you've got a situation where the president has the right to get new U.S. attorneys in the first instance, and yet it's turned out to be a total mess and disaster. And he was sitting there yesterday, and you could watch him or listen to him and tell that he was trying to avoid saying something that he knew was a lie, but he didn't really want to describe what happened, and so it was, I don't recall, and I don't remember, and I don't recollect, and I had a meeting, but I don't know what happened in the meeting, and it was absolutely embarrassing. The Republicans knew it, and they didn't want to stand up in public before their constituents and sit there and appear to believe what he said and to take him seriously. It's time for him to go. He apparently doesn't know it, and Mr. Bush apparently doesn't know it, but it's past time for him to go.
Joe, is this going to be a situation where the president will defend him to the very end, and then at some point he will bow out on his own? I'm thinking here of the Harriet Myers situation when she bowed out of putting her name in contention for the Supreme Court. It wasn't ultimately the president who asked her to remove or recuse herself. She did it on her own.
The way these things often work is the heat gets so hot that someone goes to this person or the person in question realizes that he or she is becoming an embarrassment to the president, or a distraction to the nation's business, or they suddenly realize that they want to spend more time with their families.
Always a good time.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's
a good time.
But it often does become this situation where I think they truly believe they can continue to do the work, but that they are a distraction. And clearly, the Gonzalez situation has become a distraction for this administration. There's a great deal of attention on what he said, when he said, and how many different ways he described things, and how many times he can't recall a meeting that happened in November, for example. And so I think that this the hearing yesterday, the testimony certainly did not help Gonzalez's longevity with this administration. I think it will simply provide more fuel for the fire that seems to be building beneath his feet.
Nat, part of the crux of this is that some of the fired attorneys have testified that they believe their dismissals were a punishment for prosecuting Republicans or going too easy on Democrats. And yet, this administration has been fairly Teflon. It has not necessarily taken hits for a lot of different scandals, I guess I'll use the word, that have taken out selective members. I'm thinking of Scooter Libby and the whole Valerie Plame case, but that hasn't really gotten deeper into the heart of the administration. Does this have any potential to really reach into other people, or is Gonzalez totally on his own?
Well, you're trying to get to what Rove, huh? Well, actually, I think, Farai, this is an example of this. The Bush administration is just about over, and I think that Mary and Joe have summed up very well the performance of the Attorney General yesterday. In fact, I don't think that had he even been defended by Johnny Cochran or Thurgood Marshall or Charles Ogletree would have helped. It, you know, in other words, it would have been better if he'd had some of those fired attorneys to defend him yesterday, given the performance. Essentially, he took the Fifth Amendment for himself for all those 55 or 60 times that he denied having been having recalled something. But in terms of the political implications, no, I don't think that this is it's over. This is 2 weeks. The food has spoiled 2 weeks ago. People know already we have an incompetent attorney general, and it's just going to be a matter of whether or not he will, on his own, decide that it's time to spend more time with his family. The fortunate thing for us as Americans is that the Bush administration is almost coming to an end.
And it's what the other part is unfortunate, Farai, is that Gonzalez was being groomed and brought up by the Bushes all the way up, and they eventually planned to put him on the Supreme Court.
Amazing.
The Attorney General was just a stepping stone. He was going to be the first Latino on the Supreme Court. And here he has done the way he's behaved and gotten himself into this mess and can't get himself out of it. It's over.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to something that is not over. War of words between President Bush and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Huge declaration from Harry Reid. He had this to say on the Senate floor.
I believe myself that the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and you have to make your own decision as to what the president knows, that this war is lost.
Joe, is Washington vibrating right now?
Well, that is a very significant statement for the for Senator Reid to make. That it's kind of like the L word, and it's a word that nobody really wants to utter. Certainly, nobody in high ranking positions. And so, the fact that the senator did this, that the majority leader of the Senate did this, I think it will probably make many other people who oppose the war, many other people in positions of power, particularly people who have to answer to an increasingly frustrated electorate, agree with him. Now he is being hit. He certainly has been hit with complaints from Republicans that this will undermine the troops in the field. Well, the fact of the matter is, the critics, I think, are setting their sights on the White House and not the troops, and they see themselves as actually supporting the troops, because bringing the troops home from what for many seems to be a losing cause is one way, and perhaps the best way in the eyes of critics of the war, to actually support the troops.
And in case you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. That was Joe Davidson of The Washington Post just talking a little bit about Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid talking about this war is lost. We've also got Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Nat Irvin of Wake Forest University and a columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. So, Nat, let me go to you on this. Mm-hmm. Is this a tactical mistake on the part of the Democrats? No, go ahead.
It's not at all. What Senator Reid is doing, this is beyond about tactics. I guess they're always tactics, but this is basically a dance that the Republicans, or that the Senator Reid is having with the White House, the Democrats and Republicans, and that both parties are using it to the advantage of trying to get the Iraqis to come to grips with the fact, as Secretary Gates said, the time clock is ticking. You notice that every time the Democrats will make more of a fuss about the funding for the war and the need for timetables, the Republicans, when they go visit Iraq, they always share that with the Iraqis, saying, hey, guys, look what pressure we're getting back home. So what do you expect the president to say? The president will not say that the war is lost, but the Congress has a responsibility, and I think Senator Reid is right to do this, when you have over 70% of Americans basically feel the way that he does. So he's simply reflecting what I think is the majority of the Americans' opinion, and as it should be. And hopefully it will help to bring this matter to a close.
Mary, what strikes me is that the Democrats really are pushing to have some control over the funding. And the president, of course, says, no way, no how. I'll veto anything that is not acceptable to me. Do you think that on this broader scale of funding, the Democrats or the White House have the advantage?
I think that the Democrats have the advantage in that they have the power to appropriate or not appropriate and set some terms. I think the president has the advantage in that there are still some people who will buy his argument that if they try to set timetables, they're not funding the troops, and they have to figure out what language they're going to use over and over again to keep people from saying that, since they have some people in the Democratic caucus who have been elected from districts where that kind of language, despite the president's 30% or whatever it is, 29% approval rating, will weigh heavily. So I think that they both, on balance, they both have good points to make. I think in the end, the Democrats will prevail in getting some kind of language, although not a fixed deadline. But I wanted to point out quickly, Faraya, that the president keeps engaging in this discussion with the factual misstatements that have characterized this whole debate about the war. Reid is more right when he compares it to Vietnam. The president makes up things. In Cambodia, a civil war occurred in part because we bombed Cambodia. The Khmer Rouge came to power 2 years after we left Vietnam altogether in 1973, after a civil war. And it was, in fact, in 1979, the Vietnamese who came to Cambodia and ran the Khmer Rouge out. So that he's got his facts all wrong, and he tries to scare us to death by telling us if we don't stay in Iraq, somebody's going to follow us here. In any case, I think on Vietnam, I think the comparison that Reid made is a better one. And I think on the funding issue, the Democrats do have some leverage. It's just they have to be careful how they characterize what they're doing.
Let's move on to another topic, domestic topic. On Tuesday, we aired a conversation with Hillary Shelton, director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau. Now, he's helping to coordinate a group of financial and civil rights watchdog groups, and they want a six-month moratorium on subprime loan foreclosures. And these loans disproportionately go to people of color, even folks who have good income and credit history. And now some big home lenders are stepping in on their own. Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, Washington Mutual, they're putting together programs so families with these high-risk mortgages can refinance and keep their homes. So what do you think? Mary, I'll start with you. Are these lenders stepping up on their own, or is pressure from outside advocacy groups driving them, or is it financial survival that if they have too many defaults, they just will take too big of a hit, or combination, I guess?
All of the above and more. Part of it's pressure. Part of it is the need to keep this from being an economic disaster, and part of it is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are under pressure and have been since their financial problems, and they're in trouble with the congressional committees because they had these scandals about what the high-level people over there were doing, which has not been ended. And so this is a way to show them as doing something good for the economy, and I think the Financial Services Committee yesterday was very pleased that they came out and said that they had some way to bail out these companies. So it's good economics. It's good for the advocacy groups that want to help these people, many of whom are working class, poor people of color, black people, and other poor people. And it's good for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Nat, you are a professor of future studies, which I just love that title. And so give us a little crystal ball on why this issue matters.
Well, because we have $1 trillion in subprime loans outstanding. This is a big deal. Now, $22 billion is not going to do much. But what this does is it gets to the heart of what it means to be what's a part of the American dream, to own your own home. And if we have a major crisis at this point, especially with the folks who we're talking about, this portends badly for the American economy. And so you would expect that Freddie Mac and Washington Mutual and other major subprime lenders to come forward and try to offer some support. One thing I don't expect, however, is much intervention on behalf of the government. I do expect that the government will try to urge the private markets to come to the aid to try to make some adjustments. But, you know, we have to be cautious here. People are not going to go into this business to lose money. And every proposal that's being presented now is not necessarily going to solve every problem for everybody who's behind. People still have to be careful about the kinds of loans that they make.
Joe, do you agree with Nat saying that there's not going to be a direct government intervention on this?
Well, I don't know. I don't. My crystal ball probably isn't as clear as his is, but I do think that that the government will certainly encourage ways to get the country out of this dilemma. One of those, for example, is allowing people with these adjustable rate mortgages to refinance to a fixed 30-year mortgage, but without necessarily jumping through all of the hoops like the credit check, because now their credit is checked in a sense. They won't be able to survive a credit check, and so this means they cannot refinance. Well, if you can ease the rules to allow these people to refinance anyway, it might help. It certainly would help them, and it would probably help the mortgage industry too, because the mortgage industry doesn't want to have all of these foreclosures on their hands. I mean, they don't go into this business to foreclose people. They go into the business to collect the mortgages. And if they can find a way to collect the mortgages over a 30 or 40 year fixed term, even from people who might have a less than totally clean credit rating, perhaps because of the jam of these adjustable rate mortgages, then it could be something at least approaching a win-win for both sides.
Mary, final word. Do you think that ultimately African Americans will get something better in terms of treatment from this industry out of this whole crisis over subprime loans?
Well, we can hope so. We always hope that whenever anything happens that we will get better treatment. But I think that if some way is found to work out these mortgages so that people can avoid a foreclosure and keep their homes, and greater attention is paid to the industry by the Financial Services Committee with Barney Frank and the rest of them, and I think that something may come out so that we don't end up with more studies about how much African Americans pay higher interest rates and have harder times getting loans and are foreclosed more likely. So maybe something will come out of this that will be positive.
All right. On that note, from NPR's D.C. headquarters, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Joe Davidson, editor at The Washington Post, and Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University and columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal, joined us from WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.